So if I could just start by asking you who you are.
Robert Radcliffe. My date of birth 16547.
How did you know Catherine Farragher?
Through working in the what was then the Ramsey Courier, which was in Water Street, stroke Parliament Street, ran between the two. And I was I started off as a apprentice compositor in there, and started then for Christmas of 1963. Kathleen had her poems published in the Courier, and one of my jobs as the apprentice was to take proofs of the first proofs of the poems to her house from the Courier for her to check. Then of course you had to wait while she checked them. As I was alluding to before, that there was only one person in the Courier that was actually allowed to set them, and that was a chap called Fred Quirk, who was an ace liner type operator who could more or less do anything without any mistakes in it. The amount of clean proofs he used to do were absolutely incredible. Yeah. He could actually set. He used to come in sometimes on overtime on Saturday morning, and the weekend was his drinking time. He didn't drink in the week at all, but from Friday till Saturday night he drank, and Fred would come in on a Saturday morning and set memorandums and articles, no bother, with a big bottle of Strombo cider on his cabinet. Yeah, a character. So anyway, yeah. So Fred did those, and I had to take them up to Windsor Mount and wait while Kathleen checked them. And we'll be tired if there were any errors in them, because she used to shout if there were.
So she was a bit fierce.
She could be, yeah, certainly. And I think, if I recall, I'm not getting mixed up with another lady who was up there. I'm sure I used to get an apple as well from her. Up in those days, of course, with the princes all smoked, and I think a cigarette would probably have been better. So, but we used to get an apple. Yeah.
How old were you then?
When I was coming to Catholic, I was 16, 17, something like that. And I'm trying to think what happened afterwards. I didn't go up there that many times, but I certainly went up a few times. But I do recall I used to have to stand as well while she checked them. You never sat. You stood. Yeah.
No sort of sitting with a cup of tea or anything like that?
No. You stood and waited.
Perhaps it's worth just explaining what a compositor is.
There were basically two trades within the... crafts within the printing world. There was a compositor and there was a machine minder. And basically the machine minder did the printing, whereas the compositor did the typesetting, the arranging, and got everything ready for the press, basically, yeah. And within the compositor's trade, there were people who would work on linotype machines, which were basically the hot metal machines. The linotypes were basically lines of type, and they were set by hot metal, whereas prior to the hot metal machines, it was all set by hand. Every letter was individually placed in a stick, and you made up the type. In fact, even when I started, there were lots of the jobs that were still handset. The likes of dance cards, things like that, business cards, wedding invitations, even some of the display lines in the newspapers, because the linotype would only cast up to about 24 point, whereas if you want a bigger headlines and stuff like that, they were all handset. So it was a bit of an art, and you set them in a, you collect them in a stick, and then the lines were individually spaced then. But it was amazing some of the work that the compositors did before I started, because everything was handset, and some of it was absolutely amazing, you know, pages of broadsheet type. Every individual letters, and then of course when they were printed they all had to be distributed again, they're all put back in the cases, and it was amazing to watch them, the guys that did the there was one guy who was who was retired. He'd retired to the island. He was a master printer in the UK, and even though he was sort of half blind, he could. It was amazing he kept set. He didn't have to look. He knew exactly where all the letters were in the cases, and of course you could feel which way up they were. It was amazing. Yeah.
Sounds like he really was half blind.
He was. He was about. Chap's name was Ernie Brown, and he. I think he was well into his 80s when he finally had to stop. Yeah, what they already was doing in the end, he was just to do the posters. And some of the posters, of course, they had type that deep. Some of the posters they did for the likes of the Steam Packet, where they were big, what they call double crown posters, and you know, they were very big. And of course, they used big wooden blocks because they would be far too heavy with metal. It was amazing seeing them being printed, it really was. Yeah.
And so you're running around with the proofs.
Mm-hmm.
How much of the paper was outsourced to outside writers as opposed to in-house?
Be none, basically. Apart from maybe... They had... how many... Well, they had some full-time reporters, and then they had... reporters like Esther Richmond and she'd be worth speaking to now. I think the rest is still about. Esther would do the courts, and when I later progressed on to doing linotyping, Esther's used to love getting Esther's copy. It was all beautifully handwritten, but used to do them on nice note size, pad size sheets of individual paper. And they're beautiful. You could whiz through them when you're typesetting. I mean, some of the copy you used to get was absolutely terrible. You need to try to decipher it. But Esther's handwriting was absolutely gorgeous when it came in. And there was no ruled lines or anything like that. It was all done sheets of paper. And they'd be absolutely beautiful. Straight across. Yeah, and you could absolutely fly through that. Yeah. So, yeah, Esther's something you speak to. So she was one. And there were farming reporters. There was a chap called Harvey Briggs. He used to do the farmer. And of course, like I said, there was a whole page of women's institutes, a whole page of them. And I think they were published once a month, the WIs. And they had various contributors of sports. They weren't paid for, though. They were just contributors. Football reporter, there'd be cycle reporter, snooker leagues, all reported. The rifle shooting, things like that. And I think at one time they used to even have like of youth reports and things like that. But they were people who just sent it, and I don't think they were paid. I don't know whether Kathleen was paid or not.
And so all those people wouldn't have been someone showing the proofs to all of those people?
No, they'd have been done in-house. I think it was only people like Kathleen, where it was important it was right. For the rhythm and stuff, the punctuation stuff was wrong. Yeah, she was so precise. It'd be interesting to look at the punctuation afterwards. Yeah, but she was. It had to be absolutely right. Yeah.
Which is very interesting when it's a dialect thing.
Mm.
That she should put so much care and attention into punctuation.
Mm. I think when you look at it, you can see it. Mm. It's all there. Yeah.
And so that you went out. You wonder if you're going out giving her special treatment, I guess, to give her the proofs was...
Probably, yeah. I don't think there would have been much need. I don't think, like, a football report and things like that. I mean, and the darts league, of course, that was a big thing as well, the darts league. They would send their reports in, and they'd be sub-edited and whatever. I wouldn't have thought that even in those days they went in raw. Later on, when the paper became a little more sophisticated, when John Christian bought it, it certainly changed then. Whereas before, the editor would do the editing, he would do a bit of writing, and he'd also do the sub-editing. Whereas later on, we'd have specific sub-editors and stuff. And the Ramsey Courier became the Isle of Man Courier, which then started publishing three titles. It had the Courier, the Mourners Herald, and the Sunday News. It was a Sunday paper that they printed. Mm.
She lived at Windsor Mount.
That's, yep.
That isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we knew that. Do you know what number or whereabouts?
It was early on the terrace. I'm not sure exactly. I would think probably about the first or second house up the hill, I would think. Because one of the directors and the previous editor of the Courier, Ramsay Courier as it was then, Fred Turnbull, he lived in a house called The Haven there. And that was another thing he had to do. Was one of the jobs was to go up and drop stuff up to Fred because he had been the editor. But he wasn't in wonderful health, and I think Sidney Bolton by then was becoming, really was the editor. But Fred liked to keep his finger on the pulse and often liked to drop stuff off to him as well. So, yeah.
What was the house like? Do you remember at all?
I don't. I remember, I was trying to think about it last night. All I can remember was actually, was going up the steps and going in the front door, and it was used to go into the first room on the right. And that's about it. And then I know that it overlooked the park. I used to stand there, look out over the park while she was going through it. Yeah.
And so how would she react if she did find a mistake in it?
I don't think it was, although she would tut, tut, tut. I think basically when it was in the proof stage, it was acceptable, I think, to a certain point. It was, if it ever got into the paper and there was anything wrong with it, I think that's when there would have been a problem. Yeah, I think it happened on more than one occasion, I think. Because they didn't want, you know, getting them from sometimes, from the galley where the stuff was stored and into the page, sometimes things did go wrong. It wasn't unknown to have a line transposed. And then there would be trouble.
Would she be coming in at that point?
At that point, do I not know? I know from time to time she did come in. Yeah, so... Yes, I don't think I think Sydney was a little afraid of her, I think.
That's really interesting, because to everyone else, as a performer or as a WI member, she was a lovely old lady who was very nice and chatty. Mm. So it was very nice to have this.
Maybe the professional side of her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an artist, isn't it? Once they've created something, they want it to be as they created it, not as the printer's made a mess of it. Yes.
Yeah. And so do you know about her being paid or anything like that?
I don't. I mean, I would have had no interest. You know, as printers and apprentices, you did what you were told, and that was it.
And how much of a lead did she give, if you know what I mean? Because it sounds like quite a long turnaround between getting the copy, setting it, getting the proof, going back for it.
It would depend. It would depend on what work was on at the time. Generally, in the cycle of things, because the Courier in those days was only about 10. Broadsheet pages, sometimes it went to 12, but it was unusual. It was more likely to be an 8 or a 10 page paper, so it really depended how busy they were. I mean, it was a commercial printers as well, so generally what happened is Friday the paper went to press on a Thursday night, or it was meant to, so generally Friday, the decks were cleared of newspaper work, so all the job and work would be done then. Tuesday, probably Wednesday, and then copy would start to come in. So the general sort of stuff like the WIs and stuff like that would all be set on a Tuesday. And building up to the court cases and things, the Wednesday, latest news Thursday. And generally, they tried to get the first sort of copies running off around about... Up past 7, 8 o'clock, sometimes later. But generally that was it. They'd start printing. They only print... The evening run would only be for out of town. So they had to get those to the bus station. So you had what was supposed to be a help to get you over there. But it was never designed by anybody. You knew anything about physics. It was a terrible thing. Anyway, you got them over to the bus station. and then they were put there. And if the buses, there were no buses there, he used to knock the night watchman up, and then they used to take them in, and they'd go on the first bus in the morning to the towns or whatever. And then Friday morning, he'd start to do the Ramsey print. Yeah, they'd start, the news agents would be in there waiting for the first copies off. Quite a busy day there on Fridays. But anyway, back to the typesetting. Yes, so that's roughly how it worked. That was the time scale. So with Kathleen's, unless they were particularly something that she'd done to record a recent event or not, they could have been done ahead of time. In fact, I think they were. I think sometimes they were stored. Maybe she'd give two or three and then they'd be put in as and when there was room for them. Because sometimes space got tight, particularly if they got late advertisers, and the advertising staff were good at that. They'd be working on an advert which would suddenly appear in the last half a day before press, and then news would have to be taken out. Obviously, it was important to get the adverts in. So maybe one of Kathleen's poems, which would be just a nice size advert, would be maybe stalled until the next week.
That's interesting, because the last thing she published in the Courier was on the last day of her life, and so that I assume that would perhaps have been given in just that week, a few days earlier.
When was that?
74.
1974.
10th of May.
Yeah, right. Just trying to think when that. Transitionally, I think that's when the Courier's, the way it was being produced was changing. I'm not sure when there was a strike, you see. And I left the Courier, I think, in 1977, 78, I think I left. That's interesting.
She later moved from Windsor Mount out to Glenmona.
I didn't know that, right.
And Sue Woolley remembers her coming in, delivering her copy.
Oh, right.
Apparently. I don't know if you remember that.
Well, if she came into Ramsey, then probably we're still printing then. I don't know. That's the only thing I can remember, really, was going up to Windsor Mount. And of course, we do remember producing the books and stuff that she did. I remember those being done. Yeah. But yeah, as far as I would, apart from delivering the proof, I'd have no need to see her. I don't think I can't remember ever setting any of her poems. Like I say, Fred did them all. Yeah, she insisted that Fred did them.
She insisted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She sounds like a bit of a pain, Queen Printers.
that I don't know. Yeah, I think what we said before is that she probably just wanted to have it done correctly.
Mm.
And who can blame her for that?
And so these books, which were printed by the Courier, I think there were five of them done by the Courier. Were you printing many sorts of books back then?
What was the Courier in general? Books? No, not really. Most of the stuff did it was general sort of stuff, letter headings and things like that, compliment slips. We did a lot of posters, dance tickets, things like that, business cards, invitations. We did lots of wedding invitations. We did hymn sheets, catalogues. We did the catalogues for like the Royal Manx Show and the Southern Show and all the agricultural shows, most of them around the island. We got election time was busy because with the commercial side of it being attached to a newspaper, it would more or less, if they had their manifestos printed by the Courier, it more or less meant that they would get a spot in the paper. So we did lots of manifestos. Got most of the government notices and things like that went on posters. Election, you know, the run-up to the election was incredible, as we did all the posters declaring that there was going to be election, and then once the nominations were in, we had to do posters showing the who the nominees were, and there was The ballot books they all produce, and it was quite a busy time, election around the election times. So yeah, there was, as far as books are concerned, we did do, which was an incredible piece of work. I kept a copy of it, and I don't know where it went to, but it was amazing. I don't even heard of a chap called Stoll Kenyon, but he produced a book called The Gills and the Gels, and it was about his family. And it traced his family roots back to about the 17th century. That's Kenay and St John's. And it was a big publication. I think there was something like about 80 pages. But then he also had all these family trees and things that he'd done as well. And it took, we should never take it on. It was too big a job. But it was amazing when it was finished. It was a publication like that. And that was probably the biggest job that the Courier ever took on. Yeah.
Family Tree sounds like a hefty thing to set.
It would be a great book. If you could get a copy of it, that would be a fabulous thing to research. It was amazing, because I did some of the typesetting on it. And he was a little more relaxed than Kathleen. And he lived out just out the road here, on the corner. I can't remember the name of the house now. Really, he was a lovely, lovely man. Had a terrible stutter, but which he didn't seem to bother him. But it was an incredible work of art. It really was. You know, labour of love, as he said. And he finished it. He didn't think he was going to finish it before his death, but he did. Because we only fitted it in between producing the papers, and it really was squeezed in. It was done as a favour to him. And yeah, that'd be something to get hold of. There were only something like 150 copies. And they were all numbered, and they were all signed off by him. But of course, they were so over, and I had one. I regret to this day that I don't know where it is.
Hopefully, it'll appear in a loft or in a box or something one day.
Yeah, I don't think so. Somehow.
What was the name and title again?
Gills and the Gels. It was called. And it's had every member that he traced, the families were all given numbers. Yeah. And there was a section on just about every single number, where they were, where they had been. It was amazing. Yeah.
It's a shame everyone doesn't do that. Imagine what a wealth of knowledge we'd have if everyone was
like, yeah, I wonder if he actually... I mean, it would have been a sensible thing to do, to have given a copy to the Manx Museum. And I often wonder if there's one in there.
How did Kathleen's books fit into this? You were saying before about them being printed before Christmas.
Well, they were. I think what they did, they printed quite a sizable run, and they were just sold as and when the local bookshops had a need for them. From what I remember people used to come in and ask for more Kathleen's books, and you go and have a look, and you know, you'd find whatever was there. And if they were running short, when there was some quiet time, they'd print some more. Basically, that was like they were kept in type. Excuse me, if you've never been in a printer's, the linotype were all done in blocks of, they're all separate slugs, and they would be kept on galleys. And what you do like with those, they'd be done in pages, and then it'd be tied with string, believe it or not, and they just wrapped around with string, you just pushed them down the side, they were as tight as anything, so you could always pick them up with one hand, even though there'd be probably 30, 40 lines of slugs, they'd be tied that tight, you could just pick them up like that. And they were all stored in galley racks, and then they'd be stuck in the corner of the stuff that was never used. And whenever it was needed again, they'd be taken out, they'd be washed down with petrol, given a good scrub, locked up, put on the machine and printed. Yeah. And sometimes what you'd do, they would print off quite a lot of the sheets and then leave them without folding them or binding them. And they'd be left there again until there was a quiet time. And then if there was nothing to do for maybe the apprentice or something, they would run, you know, 20, a couple hundred maybe copies through the folder. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Mm.
And so so there's no sort of thing as editions as such. You just kind of printed them as and when.
I think they did, yes. I think there would be they would say it was Kathleen Farragher's new one, I'm sure, and then new book we added to the stable, but my recollection, there was a shelf where they were kept, around by one of the old the platens, one of the old foot-driven platens they used to use.
And I imagine with that way of doing it, there'd be no record of how many were printed.
I wouldn't have thought so, not unless you got had some of the ledgers. And I know some of them went out without having been paid for. Often not somebody would come looking for one if it was somebody's friend, and they would they often got a copy.
Okay, so do you have any idea, do you have any estimate? Because we have no idea how many are printed.
No idea. No. Wouldn't have a clue. No.
They sound like a popular thing there.
Oh, they were. Yeah, I say around Christmas time. And of course the Manx societies, that was another thing that used to feature in the Courier regularly, were the Manx reports from the Manx societies from all over the world. They were quite regular. It was amazing how many there were. And of course they had their regular meetings and the reports used to arrive the Courier.
And so these little illustrations,
they're just general things. You could buy those in. Yeah, they're like, if I recall that series of illustrations, they were just like, what were they called? Anyway, they were just solid blocks of metal with an engraving on them. Yeah.
Oh, I see. That makes sense, because they don't look very Manx. But...
they weren't, no, you'd buy them in. There'd be probably four or five drawers of different sorts. Sometimes they would do graphics, basically just to fill a page up. And if you wanted to stretch a page out, there was lots of ways of doing it. You could lead the lines. I put strips of lead in, so you increase the spacing. You can double space the paragraphs, or you can put these little sorts in, or illustrations. Yeah. I mean, not like it is now. You can just fire a photograph in. Ad lib. I mean, in those days, yet they had to be sent away. Yeah, big photographs made, and then before the Isle of Man Examiner had a clichograph, which was able to produce the photographs.
I have no idea about any of this. It's all, of course, it's all.
Well, basically, a clichograph. What it did, it turned the pictures into basically dots and no dots, or it went from absolutely solid to white space, and obviously it's gradient. And you heard of the thing half tone, that was the half tone, and the clichograph produced it. Basically, it scanned the photograph, did a line at a time, and then gradually built up the photograph. And they were done on plates. They were then stuck on wooden blocks for weight. Yep, and that was how the half tone got to the newspaper. Yeah.
And you mentioned before about Kathleen being involved in the crosswords on the paper.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that. I do remember taking crosswords up to her to have them proofread. I don't think she did that many, but it was, I don't know, it was once a month or whatever. But there certainly were crosswords that she was involved with. I used to bring up to her. Yeah, like I say, I do remember her working to about four different grids. And of course, there were occasions when the wrong grid went in, and that's when the fan really did it. The smoke really did it. The fan, maybe the fan, the smoke. Yeah. But,
that's interesting, because of course that would be uncredited, of course, wouldn't it?
They were. Yeah, there was no name went in for them. I think there was a cryptic nom de plume that went on them, yeah. But I don't think it was a long-lived thing.
Her doing it, or you?
The actual doing the crossword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like the sort of thing you'd get from a syndicate quite easily, wouldn't you?
Well, that did certainly happen later on. Like I said, when John Christian got involved, and suddenly the Courier went from being like a Ramsey town paper to becoming an Ireland paper, and he brought in truly professional editors. And one of the guys he brought in was a fellow called Drew Rennie, who had been assistant editor, deputy editor, the Scottish Daily Express. And he brought in a guy called Tony, I'm going to forget his name now, Tony. Anyway, I remember, and he'd been one of the editors, Daily Telegraph. That sort of profile of the people that John Christian brought in, and they really did up the game. We were producing then. When he started, 24-page paper broadsheet, that was regular, and then he bought the Monas Herald, so that was produced in Ramsey. That was I think they used to run about 12-16 pages. Tony Grantham was the guy he brought from the Telegraph, and he then started a Sunday paper, which was a 32-page tabloid. So that was produced, and it was too much, because of the costs involved and getting proper staff. Most of it was produced on with overtime, and the cost was too high. The idea was to basically run the Examiner into the ground, but it never happened. I mean, it's ironic that the Couriers are still going alongside the Examiner, both owned by the same group. But
And so towards the end of her life, Catherine was doing these stories for the Courier. Did you know anything about them?
Absolutely nothing. I don't recall that. Nope. But there again, I was my sort of role changed a little bit, because I became foreman in there, so it was, I did a lot more than typesetting. That was, I only did typesetting if we were short-handed or there was somebody on holiday. There were lots of other things to do, because we shared running the press. We went from a flatbed press to a rotary flatbed, and major things, three of us were trained up on that, and then we had other machines to run as well. We were doing our own clichographs by then. We used to have big headline casting machines and stuff like that, so there was an awful lot more to it than those, after John Christian had really got it going. We went from the dark ages to not exactly state of the art, but it was he really upped the game. A much more professional outfit.
And the only other question as well, I think, is about whether she ever didn't deliver, because I know that she was an unwell person, so I imagine she...
That I wouldn't know. No. My sole really contact with her was the proofs. To my knowledge, I never ever set a poem or anything like that. Mm. But I do remember printing the books.
Fantastic.
Good.
Thank you.
I'm sure there's not an awful lot, but
all of this is not known.
Yeah, I can still. I can. Those memories are quite clear, strangely enough. So I must have been up there quite a few times.
Must have been quite funny. As the young kid.
Well, it was a skive.
Yeah.
Disappear.
That you weren't going back too quickly.
There were lots of ways of getting there. Another thing was putting the steam packet posters up, because the contract not only included printing them, but also to pasting them. And the Courier owned pasting stations around the town. And it was great, because in the winter the posters didn't change that much, but you weren't expected to check them, that they were still there. And if they weren't, if they were in a bad condition, they had to be replaced. And the guy who was in charge of the steam packet, because the steam packet had a proper office in those days on the quay, and it was run by a chap called Bell. Tell me his first name. And he used to regularly phone up if the local vandals had ripped the poster off, particularly on the Stone Bridge. The Stone Bridge there was a quite a big pasting station on the Stone Bridge, and often those were ripped off, maybe on the boys between the Central and the Bridge Hotel had decided to take them off on Saturday night, and they often had to go and replace those. But it was a nice little walk. They were posted up in the front of the Courier. Then there was on Old River Road, there was a pasting station there, and then there was the bridge. And there were some other boards where by the mart as well, occasionally allowed to use those as well. So you could disappear for the afternoon doing that. With your bucket of paste and all the posters rolled under your arm. Oh,
what a different world.
It really was. I keep saying we should get together with some of the other lads that used to work in there and do a proper story on it, because it was fascinating. I didn't want to be a printer. I was waiting to get an apprenticeship as an electrician at the shipyard. But my dad happened to meet the Fred Quirk who was setting those one Saturday night as Fred was drunkenly rolling up the road and asked if there was any jobs going on the courier. And he said, "Who for?" And he said, "For my son Robert." He said, "I'll sort it." And then it was about a couple of days later, I was sent off down the road with a pair of overalls under my arm. And that was it. Because my dad had had enough of me wasting my time at school. That's how I started in there. And it was fascinating. It really was. And the things they did. But producing the courier on a Thursday night, once the editor was satisfied that it was ready to go, there was a crate of ale brought in. In fact, two crates of ale brought in. And everybody got stuck into beer before they printed it. It was incredible. You just imagine doing that now.
Yeah.
You know, the machine minder used to be printing with a bottle of beer on the side of the machine. With these massive sheets, you would not believe it was an absolute art. A massive sheets of paper, it'd be probably twice the size of this table, and he used to just flick a sheet of paper up, that get the air under it, and put it into the machine. They were sheet fed, these massive sheets of paper, and he used to just flick them and get the air on them and guide them in. And they'd print in those days, not as many as they were when John Christian took over and it was properly automated, but they'd print about 5,000 or 6,000 copies of that. And then after it was printed, the sheets were then had to be cut or folded. And there's a folding machine. And they gave these big sheets of paper all to be guided into the machine. And the amount of times the belts broke and it jammed, a piece of paper ripped, or a little bit of loose paper got in it and jammed it. Oh. And then sometimes, particularly in the printing, the sheets would get wrapped around the rollers. All these massive rollers, which would be the height of that room there, they ought to be washed down. It was wonderful having to wash these down with paraffin and take all these little bits of paper off. Oh, yeah, and of course, if the little bits of paper got on the half tones, of course they spoiled the image. And it was black as the ace of spades going on.
Sounds really nice. It sounds like very stressful, but kind of sounds like a little community, doesn't it?
Oh, it was. And of course, the news agents used to come in and they used to have to queue and they were always trying to. We had one guy who really sorted it out, because he came in one night as we were just getting the papers off to the bus station. And he just happened to say to one of the lads, "Well, if I gave you, say, I forget how much it was then, would you have been prepared to stay maybe another 15 minutes so I could have had 24 copies?" And it was agreed that's what we'd do. So he used to turn up, used to phone us home when we were coming to the end of the bus run, and he used to come down and he used to slip whatever it was in those days. And so he got couple of dozen papers, so he got his rep. He was able to get started on his early ones, but it was amazing about papers that were sold just in Ramsey. Other people, amazing, because the amount of news agents they had there must have been about 6 or 7 news agents in Ramsey. And his curry used to get churned out. Yeah.
So, how many were you producing each week? Like individual edition?
There was only one edition.
Yeah.
It had previously did that, it had done. Multi-editions, but printing was changing, particularly on the island. The unions were heavily involved, and it was out of all the apprentices that I knew, I was the highest paid, and because the printing industry always considered itself to be a craft rather than a trade, and they always paid more than other trades got. The apprentices were always higher paid than the likes of electricians, the joiners, the plumbers, and the gas fitters and what have you. They were always, much better paid. Yeah. In fact, the reporters were often envious of the amount that the printers were earning. It was a very strong union, the National Graphic Association. It was really strong. Yeah.